darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and I am the host of this program. I am joined by the Corner Contingent. Right across from me, my man, 100 grand, Mr. Bobby Rosa. And in the screening room, producer extraordinaire. And look, I mean this. I don't just say this because it sounds cool. It's often imitated, but never duplicated. It's the real J Mac, ladies and gentlemen. You'll be amazed what he can work out with about 1 minute and 17 seconds. You'll be amazed. I'm amazed regularly. He's a bad man. You can run that one, right? He's a bad man.
He's a bad
man. Hey, I mean,
man.
I might be partial, but this is still true. I think I got the best team in all of media and communications. That's what I believe. And I know to be true, you know, because I've worked with quite a few, you know, and I enjoy working with these brothers. Well, at this very moment, many of you, if not most of you, are making your transition from your part-time jobs where you generate an income to your full-time jobs where you cultivate an outcome. And as you do so, I want to remind you to do it with intentionality, understanding the primacy that God places on family. All kinds of things are happening all over the world. I mean, you have these protesters, terrorists, whatever you want to call it. President Trump say, oh, no more money for you, Columbia University. And you have people who are, let's just say, they're displeased all of a sudden with their favorite, I guess, former climate alarmist who would make electric cars because he's afraid of what's going to happen to the climate. Was first to create the electric car was Elon Musk and Tesla. Now, Tesla dealerships are being vandalized. Cyber attacks on the artist formerly known as Twitter. You have people literally hijacking the wheels and tires off Teslas, leaving them on blocks like they are somewhere off Gentilly, heading towards Michoud in New Orleans, where they put all the stolen cars that's been stripped and boinked. That's what it reminded me of. I know if you're not from New Orleans, you don't know what I'm talking about. But if you're from New Orleans, you know what I'm talking about. Y'all know on Gentilly, where it goes over there towards Michoud. And every city has these same areas. But you have suburbs like League City, Texas, which is right outside of Clear Lake, Texas, where, you know, the NASA headquarters are. And you have Teslas all sitting on blocks. Now, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought when you perform acts of violence in order to assert a political opinion, what do we call that again? Isn't that a federal crime? Yeah, it's called terrorism. Yeah, that's what I thought. But though all of those things are happening, because they are, we're going to get to them in the show. And I've had some people reach out to me and say, hey, tell us about what's going on with Medicare and Medicaid. Are they really cutting it? We're going to get into it today. First of all, I want to make sure everybody understands the distinctions between Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. Those are all different things. But are they really planning to cut it? That's what I keep hearing from. I'll just say this, these alarmists, and some of them are males, but they're not necessarily masculine. I'll just leave it like that. But before we get into any of those things, I want to remind you, as I do daily, that it is what goes on in your house, what goes on in my house, is far more important than what goes on in the White House. And we must batten down the hatches at home. So before we get consumed in all of the goings-on globally, nationally, I want to remind you to live locally. The most local you can be in living is your own home. And as you batten down the hatches at home, we work outwardly from there. To the Word of God we go. Luke chapter 8. I want to start here. Luke chapter 8. I'm going to focus on verses 16 and 17. This portion of Scripture comes to us following Dr. Luke recording Jesus's articulation of the parable of the sower. What follows this text is when Jesus calms the storm. You know, that's one of those things. How can I be afraid of the storm when the one who calms them dwells inside me? Oh, man. What a mighty God we serve. Angels bow before him. Heaven and earth adore him. What a mighty God we serve. But in Luke chapter 8, verses 16 through 17, Dr. Luke records Jesus' teaching, and he says something that is profound. His articulation primarily is within the context, frankly, of the final judgment for mankind. But he says something that is instructive for all of us. And so let us go to the text, Luke chapter 8, verse 16. It says this: no one, after lighting a lamp, covers it with a jar or puts it under a bed, but puts it on a stand so that those who enter may see the light. Listen up, for nothing is hidden. That's not, listen up is not in the text. I'm sorry, I should have said that. Listen up was me saying, listen up. Verse 17, for nothing is hidden that will not be made manifest or be made evident, some translations say. Nothing is hidden that will not be revealed, some other translations say. Nor is anything secret that will not be known and come to light. Nothing is hidden that will not be made manifest, nor is anything secret that will not be known and come to light. Brothers and sisters, this is a fact of life, a fact of time, but most importantly, this is a fact of eternity. There is nothing hidden that will not come to light. Yesterday on the program, I played the audio and the video from Representative Tim Burchett from Tennessee, saying that he's encouraging Elon Musk and Doge to move quickly as possible to eliminate as much waste, fraud, and abuse as possible, as quickly as possible, because the deeper he digs, he's going to ultimately find himself embroiled in a phenomenon where you have elected officials on both sides of the aisles who are on the take. And when that happens, you're going to find all of a sudden significant institutional resistance. You know, right now it's a whole lot of who let the doge out, woof. But as you get closer and closer, Elon Musk says, if I really reveal all of the theft, waste, fraud, and abuse, I'll probably get killed in the effort to do that. Isn't it interesting that while that's happening, I don't remember any vandalism taking place at Tesla dealerships about 4 years ago. I don't remember that. I don't remember. Maybe you do. You know, I don't remember that. Now, all of a sudden, it kind of reminds me of how there was not a person on the planet by and large, let's be more specific, in the nation by and large, who would speak outwardly about President Trump being a racist until he ran against she or shall never be president. Y'all remember that? I remember he was in all the rap videos about President Trump. He was in the movies. You remember him in Home Alone? You know, all the people growing up like Trump. And then all of a sudden, oh, now it's a problem. It seems to be a similar pattern there. But what I'm talking about is bigger than the personages or the individuals. What I am talking about is something that Jesus himself said. Nothing is hidden that won't be revealed. This is one of the major reasons why when people have the question about the problem of evil, you know, if God exists, why does he eliminate all the evil? And if you dig down to it, if God eliminates all the evil, guess who would be eliminating? You and me. Because evil is not evaluated on a humanistic standard. Evil is evaluated on the cosmic, eternal, omnipotent standard. But here's the key. Justice is not merely temporal. And rest assured, those who give the appearance of escaping justice in the here and now, they will not escape it eternally. They will not escape it eternally. So when you consider the problem of evil, resist the temptation to limit your considerations to the here and now. The scripture reveals, Romans 13, that government is an instrument of justice. It's a minister of God to punish wickedness and to reward righteousness. However, because it is a minister of justice that utilizes fallen human beings, there will be flaws along the way. But perfect justice is not limited to our temporal assessment. So the ones who think they're escaping here and now, the ones that are stealing and think they're getting away, the child abuser who think nobody knows what's going on, they're not escaping ultimately. There is nothing hidden that will not be revealed. Now, hey, what are you saying? Does that mean we should not seek nor work for justice in here and now? No, absolutely not. Remember what I said, that God described the government as his instrument for justice. And you have to assess Romans 13 following Romans chapter 12 leading into 13, because in chapter 12, the Lord prohibits vigilantism, says, vengeance is mine, I will repay. You don't go and try to exact your own vengeance. But then he immediately turns and said, government is his minister of justice, and government bears not the sword in vain. I've said before, what do you think government in the first century was using a sword for? It sure wasn't for flossing teeth. No, we should work for justice. We need to make sure, however, that our understanding of a justice is derived from the author of life, from truth. And we likewise understand that there is a working for justice to be meted out in the temporal sense. But there is one righteous judge who no one escapes, who no one escapes. So rest assured, there is nothing hidden that won't be revealed. Not a one. Not a one. Not a one. This is one of the things that is a source of comfort when people are reeling from a lack of justice. For example, just because James Comey the Clown saying, hey, there's no prosecutor who will prosecute that crime, that ain't mean God is in agreement with that. Doesn't mean God is in agreement with that. And so the reason why I'm sharing this is to help us to have an expanded understanding. And when we say trust in the Lord, it is a comprehensive trust in the Lord. It is a trust in the Lord also to understand that justice also rests in his hands. So we don't have to grimace or be paralyzed by grief when we see a lack of justice. We should work for it in the temporal, but understand no one escapes. And it's always interesting to me when I talk to people who profess themselves to be atheists, yet they say things like, but this is unjust. And I simply ask the question, by what standard do you assess? By what standard do you assess? Why do people have almost an innate desire for things to be right? That's wrong for you to do that. Even the most open border advocate would have to acknowledge 300-something thousand children missing and we can't even find them. That's wrong. Why do we have that? Because mankind is made in the image of God. There is a law because there is a lawgiver. There is a standard because there is a transcendent one. There is not a one who escapes, and not even us, which is why it is prudent for us when the Lord highlights our evil. Let's call it what it is. It's evil. Sometimes we like to euphemize, like, oh, that's a little white lie. It's sin. Most virulently because it's an offense to a high and holy God. And the Lord judges our evil. Which is why when we declare that we're Christians, we're saying nothing good about ourselves. We're saying we are worthy of eternal damnation. But the Lord has opened our eyes to recognize that, and we have sought refuge in the finished work of the cross. There is one who paid the penalty for my sin earned wages. For the wages of sin is death, but the free gift of God is eternal life. When you become a Christian, you're saying nothing gloriously good of yourself. You're saying, there is one who is good, and he stepped in and bore the weight and punishment for my sin. And my only appropriate response is to serve him with my life. What a glorious king that we serve. And make no mistake about it, there's nothing hidden that's not going to come to light.
A Discipleship Minute with Joseph Parker.
My encouragement and challenge to every single listener is that you pray and ask the Lord the question, Lord, what do you want me to do? You know, that's the prayer that Paul prayed right after he received Christ and put his faith in the Lord on the road to Damascus. He asked the question, Lord, what do you want me to do? And as it relates to following and serving the Lord, that's a wise question to pray actually every single day. It's a good prayer and a question to ask the Lord every day. Lord, what do you want me to do? And as it relates to being involved in this important cause of standing for life and standing against the tragedy of abortion, the question and prayer is a wise one to pray. Lord, what do you want me to do? There are many that God would have them to become faithful intercessors who pray every day. Lots of spiritual warfare happens around every pregnancy clinic, and lots of spiritual warfare happens around abortion clinics as well.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. I'm going to begin this segment with the question, is the auto pen mightier than the accountability sword? What am I talking about? The Oversight Project, which is an investigative initiative under the auspices of the Heritage Foundation, collected a bevy of documents signed purportedly, and you'll see why I'm saying purportedly, by Mr. Joseph Robinette Biden during his time in the Oval Office. And the Oversight Project found an interesting occurrence. Save for the pardon for one Hunter Biden and documents that should have ink upon them, there is no ink as derived from a pen. As we all witnessed, President Trump in the Oval Office signing executive orders, seeing the pens he's using, handing them out. It turns out much, if not most, of the documents signed during the Biden administration were not signed by pen, it appears. The Hunter Biden pardon appears to have been signed in pen, which indicates, according to some forensic document examiners, that it was signed in pen, and you can tell by the strikes on the page that they were indicative of Mr. Biden's mental decline. I can tell you, in my time of being a criminal law prosecutor, I've had cases where I have put on handwriting exemplars at trial, have put witnesses and examined forensic document examiners on the witness stand, and this is an entire discipline that we use. Well, according to the Oversight Project, it appears that a host of documents were signed by AutoPen. What is AutoPen, you might ask? Well, AutoPen is a digital initiated signature. Oftentimes, people who have to sign things on a frequent basis use things like digital signatures. I had a stamp because as an assistant district attorney, I had to sign lots of papers. I had to sign documents. So I would have a stamp that would just save me time if I have to sign a stack of documents. It's faster to stamp it than to handwrite each and every single one. But it was still me stamping it. The examination by Project the Oversight Project, has left many to ask the question, have left some asking the question, did Mr. Biden actually sign all of these? And some of you might recall the interview with Barry Weiss from House Speaker Mike Johnson when he was interviewed by Barry Weiss shortly after leaving the Oval Office, where Speaker Johnson asked Mr. Biden, why did he sign this particular executive order? Mr. Biden said, I didn't sign that. I didn't sign that. Speaker Johnson said he had no clue what he'd actually signed. So the question that's presented is, did Mr. Biden's mental deterioration reach a point to where it was not him actually signing documents that purported to bear his signature? Listen to and watch Samuel Dewey, who is an attorney at the Heritage Foundation, asking some of these questions. It is clip number one. Clip one. Go.
Another angle that we were taking a look at was, well, in light of what Speaker Johnson said, in light of how little he seemed to know about what was actually going on in his administration, ostensibly under his name, was looking at the signatures. And what we saw was that it appears that there are a lot of documents that should have wet signatures, normally have wet signatures, would have a wet signature under President Trump, be it 45 or 47, looked as though they were auto-penned. And there was a very real variance between these signatures. So we looked at them all and we thought, and we said, well, that would make a lot of sense. Either you're auto-penning to hide a cognitive decline that would be inherent in the handwriting. For example, if you look at one we think he did sign himself, which is Hunter's pardon, the handwriting is shaky and has some marks that would suggest that. And then the broader question is, well, were his staff, who we knew were managing everything else, telling him what reporters to call on, telling him where to stand, telling him he had to stop talking to the press, right, were they just telling him, hey, we've got this great thing, auto-penning it, he didn't read it, didn't know what was in it, et cetera.
One of the other things that the Oversight Project found that diverged from the auto-pen signatures was the artist formerly known as Twitter announcement when Mr. Biden said he was stepping out of the race. Now, I want to be clear. This is at an investigation level. Nobody's saying this is confirmed. I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. I mean, anybody can see and has been able to see, and I've explained that Mr. Biden's decline was an open secret. You know, I talked about on this show, and this was laughable. And this is just how, you know, the scripture says, man, they don't even know how to blush. This is how bold that many of these evil people and their supporters and their encouragers and enablers are. You literally had Jake Tapper taking guests on the Crescent News Network to task for dare suggesting that Mr. Biden's mental decline prohibited his capacity to function within the Oval Office. Then the nerve of Cat Daddy. Now, homeboy is publishing a book. Literally, pull up the title of it for me, Bobby. He's publishing a book literally saying, discussing the decline of Biden's mental capacity and all the folks who covered it up. He's trying to show the players and the people like, Jake, that's you, Chief. You were part of the cover-up. You were part of the cover-up. And so, as I was saying yesterday, guys, these things have to be exposed and have to be confronted, because what occurs as a result of the lack of confrontation, it emboldens these liars. Like Jake Tapper, for example. I'm not saying Jake Tapper is a liar about everything, but for Jake Tapper to have the audacity to co-author a book discussing Biden's decline and the people that cover it up when he was one of the main ones, he would have guests embarrassed and ashamed to go on TV and say, man, I'm concerned Mr. Biden doesn't seem to be all there mentally. Oh, you're making fun of his stutter. That's what he said. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. The title of Jake Tapper's book, Original Sin. Yeah, don't go buy his book. Original Sin. The decline of Joseph Biden, the cover-up in his disastrous decision to run for re-election. When you, Jake Tapper, was on TV saying, anybody who is saying Biden is declining mentally, you are making fun of his stutter. That's what Jake Tapper said. So, now that everybody knows what, if you've been listening to this show, you've known for the longest, and you've known because I told you in 2020 that Biden wasn't going to be the candidate for the 2024 election for the Democrat Party. I told you that. Because you can see it. I said they're going to use him while he's convenient. And when it's no longer convenient to have in a position, they're going to, excuse me, sir, please step aside. Which is exactly what they did. Because they knew when this man was inaugurated, I looked, I said, oh, he's not all there. You compare him to the way he functioned when he was, for example, on the Judiciary Committee when Clarence Thomas was being confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court. You don't notice a difference? So now All of this evidence is now all of a sudden available. You know, now it's available. You have all of these staffers. Yeah, by the way, you know, Mr. Biden never really stayed awake past 3 o'clock. Once 3 o'clock occurred, he was no longer useful. Oh, yeah, he was over here. Now all of this evidence is coming up. There must be accountability, is what I'm saying. There must be accountability. So I encourage the Oversight Project to continue with their investigation. Short of form, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey on the spot. On the spot. This is the same Andrew Bailey who just got the $24 billion judgment from a Missouri federal court against the communist Chinese because of their functioning and of releasing and sustaining the damage caused by the Wuhan flu. That Andrew Bailey who secured that $24 billion judgment, he immediately sent a letter to the Department of Justice saying, quote, the Department of Justice must investigate whether Biden's cognitive decline allowed, this is the key, guys, unelected staff to push through radical policy without his knowing approval. End quote. This is the key. Y'all gonna have to excuse me. I'm gonna keep it together. This is the audacity I'm talking about. These very same people, Joyless Reid, who's no longer employed by MSNBC. Oh, I ain't Justin Timberlake, but cry me a river. I ain't Timberland either, but still cry me a river. All of these people now have the audacity to say, oh, Elon Musk is running a shadow government. Shadow government how? The man literally has a website showing everything that they're doing. Everything. He's on TV all the time. Being interviewed. In fact, I'm going to give a clip today. He was on TV yesterday. Shadow government how? Talking about co-president Musk. When we literally just have 4 years where, according to Project Oversight, all or most or much of the presidential signatures, I don't know how many there were, but many of the presidential signatures wasn't even signed by Mr. Biden by his own hand, but an auto pen was used. Who was controlling the auto pen? If the man don't know how to stand when he's next to the Ishtar bunny, if the man don't know where to stand, and he's going to try to shake hands with the air. He's supposed to be speaking. Don't know where he's supposed to be. Chuck, stand up, Chuck. God love you. Chuck is a paralytic. The man don't know up from down. And none of them had nary a word to say about a shadow government. But now they want to talk about, oh, there's a lack of accountability. There's an unelected Elon Musk. And Elon Musk ain't even a government employee. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I'm telling you, this is the audacity, guys. This is the audacity. None of them had anything to say about shadow government. Then when you know Mr. Barack Hussein Obama, Mr. Let Me Be Clear, is 5 miles down the street. Or however you want to say it, down the street. He down the street. 5 miles down the street in a mansion in Colorama. Never in American history has a former president moved 5 miles from the White House. And nobody has anything to say. Nobody has any questions about a shadow government. And now we find out, man, it seems like this dude's signature has been auto. Who's controlling the auto pen? We have to find out what's going on. I mean, and we can talk about other things, but we have literally just endured an administration at the federal government where we do not know affirmatively who was in control of the executive branch. We don't know affirmatively. I know who I believe it was, and I believe I can make a very reasoned and substantiated argument. But the problem that I have is, why isn't anybody inquisitive? Why does it fall to the Oversight Project to determine who was actually signing those documents? That should have been one of the first questions after the June debate, which is why I kept saying, listen, I get it. Okay, he's not the candidate to run. Okay, who is running the country now? Who is signing these bills that allows USAID, USAID to get this money? Who is signing all of this stuff? Who signed the 84 executive orders reversing President Trump's actions taken on the border? That's a good question. Mike says, why did Speaker Johnson wait till Biden was out of office to speak up? He didn't wait. in this instance, and he spoke up after he had a personal meeting with him. Now, I get it. If there are other interactions, you know, but I've told you guys personally, I have known Speaker Johnson to be a man of integrity. Okay, he spoke up about that after his personal meeting with Mr. Biden. Now, I don't know if he had personal meetings with him before. I would imagine that's a possibility. I don't know for sure, but he certainly was speaking up about it. And it wasn't, he was still in office when he talked about that. But this is, guys, this is galling to me. This is galling to me. And I am not comfortable knowing what I know. What I know for a fact, Mr. Biden's mental decline was an open secret in Washington, D.C. I could see it from where I sat. I know others saw it. And now all of these people kind of scurrying like cockroaches at night when the lights cut on. And now they want to say, hey, all of this stuff is leaking out now. Makes me sick to my stomach. Auto pen. Hence my question. Is the auto pen mightier than the accountability sword? Additional questions. Attorney General Bailey's referral or inquiry to Department of Justice going to bear fruit? You know, I'm just going to say it. It doesn't look good. You know, you had Attorney General Pam Bondi going on TV talking about, hey, the Epstein files are coming, and then no Epstein files. Oh, she's being hindered by the FBI office in the Southern District of New York. Okay, Cash Patel is over the FBI. What's going on? What's going on? FBI agents, some reports are saying that thousands of documents were being destroyed. I don't know if that's true, but is there any accountability taking place? This is a rare opportunity we have in our nation's unfolding at this juncture to get to the bottom of a lot of these things, and a lot is riding on this current term. I know President Trump is in office 4 years, but I've said before, the things that need to happen have to happen now, because the midterms will be here before anybody knows it. In order to have enduring, sustained change is going to require congressional input. The momentum has to be developed now that would aid Mr. Trump in getting a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate and expanding the majorities in the House in order to make some of these temporary changes that are great to make them long-term changes.
President Trump's most important job is going to be the trickiest. It's the area where the president can make the biggest progress, but it's also where he can be misled into catastrophic errors. I'm referring to his nomination of literally hundreds of federal judges, including nominations to the U.S. Supreme Court. The good news is that you can help AFA Action's constitutional experts research nominees and give advice to the president. But to do this analysis, AFA Action needs your help. So please visit AFAaction.net to donate today.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. Just answering a question I was asked during the break. Who would be a good Supreme Court justice like Clarence Thomas? Two immediately come to mind. Both of them are currently on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Judge Kyle Duncan, Judge James Ho, I think those two would be great U.S. Supreme Court justices who would preserve a constitutionalist legacy on the bench. Now, I'm going to move on because this is a question I was asked with all of the cuts by a concerned listener and viewer. What's going on with the cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security? These are entitlement programs. Everybody who follows out-of-control spending recognizes that the largest expenditures from the federal government are entitlements. All right, I first want to begin with simply describing the distinction between the two, and I'll try to do it in as simple a way as possible. Medicare is exclusively a federal program all right, that provides health insurance for people that are 65 or older or some under the age of 65 with certain disabilities or conditions, all right? Care is the root word, Medicare, all right? Medicaid, the root word, is aid. Medicaid is a joint federal and state program that helps to cover medical costs for some people with limited income and resources, all right? So think about it in these terms. Care for those are more seasoned citizens, chronologically seasoned citizens. CAID, aid, is to help those who have lower incomes and less resources. Social Security is a pension program that is not specific to health insurance or medical costs that was made available, that was created to provide a federal government administered pension program for those in retirement, which I think those who are observers of worldview recognize the socialistic leanings of the genesis of Social Security. All right. Now, having said that, I know for a fact there are lots of people, many of you listening to the program, may be on one or more of these programs, and some are rightly concerned about whether or not those benefits. Now, when I say the benefits, I want to just be clear. We're talking about the funds that you enjoy and receive as citizens. All right. President Trump has said repeatedly, and I'm not commenting on whether or not this is good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just saying what has transpired. President Trump has said repeatedly that he is not interested in cutting Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. In fact, he just released a press release. Jeff, if you put it up on the screen for me, a press release from the White House today on this very point on whitehouse.gov. President Trump and the White House issued a press release today saying that they are not interested in cutting Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. They're not interested in cutting those things at all. What they're interested in, and there was even some of this came to the fore because Elon Musk did an interview. Missing the page. Yes, I got it right here. Did an interview yesterday where he was talking about this. So I'm going to turn to the interview because you got to just tell it like it is. We have liars in our media, and liars in our media are saying things over and over and over again. Oh, Trump's going to cut you. He's going to cut your benefits. He's going to cut your benefits. He's going to cut your benefits. Minorities, be afraid because you're going to cut your benefits. You're going to cut your benefits. And it's like, that's simply not true. So yesterday, Elon Musk did an interview with Larry Kudlow on the Fox Business Network, and they were discussing this. And I want you to listen closely to what Elon Musk said, because you can get right to the, you don't have to allow these people to lie to you, all right? You can get right to what they're saying. Exactly. Listen to and watch clip number three. Clip number three, go.
I mean, the race report in entitlement spending, you know, which is all of the, which is most of the federal spending is entitlements. That's like the big one to eliminate, because that's the sort of half trillion, maybe $600-700 billion a year.
Now, I know some of that might have been garbled because of Elon Musk's South African, African-American, his accent. But what Elon Musk said was the waste and fraud in entitlement spending. Did you hear that? The waste and fraud in entitlement spending, which is most of the federal spending, is entitlements. So that's like the one, I'm sorry, that's like the big one to eliminate. That's the sort of half trillion, maybe $600-700 billion a year, end quote. All right. Now, having read the transcript of Elon Musk's statement that he made on television yesterday, I want you to listen to it again. I'm going to play it one more time because in the very beginning, he says the waste and fraud in entitlement spending is what he's focused on. Listen to it again and watch clip number three. Go.
I mean, the waste and fraud in entitlement spending, you know, which is all of the, which is most of the federal spending is entitlements. That's like the big one to eliminate, because that's the sort of half trillion, maybe $600-700 billion a year.
President Trump is not cutting anybody's benefits. and Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. What they're focused on, what Doge is focused on, what Elon Musk is focused on is waste, fraud, and abuse. Elon Musk said the waste and fraud and entitlement spending is what he's focused on. Here are a couple facts for you to digest. Fact number one, according to the U.S. Government and Accountability Office, taxpayers lose as much as $521 billion annually to fraud through the federal entitlement programs, including Medicare and Medicaid. This is according to the U.S. Government Accountability Office, the GAO. All right. Fact number two, over the past two decades, the federal government has made an estimated $2.7 trillion in, quote, improper payments, unquote, the majority of which come in the form of payments to deceased individuals or those who are no longer eligible for the government programs. $2.7 trillion over the last 20 years, over the last two decades, guys. Fact number three, the Social Security Administration estimated $72 billion in improper payments have been made between 2015 and 2022. Okay. Fact number four, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which, by the way, that is the entity within the Medicaid and Medicare programs that administer the payments. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services estimated that it made $140 billion plus, over $140 billion in improper payments in 2024 alone, just last year. Guys, I don't see nor understand why anyone would not want the waste and the fraud rooted out. That is what they're going for. Not people's appropriate benefits, it's the waste and the fraud. Do you understand? When you get rid of the waste and fraud, what ends up becoming even more clear is, oh, snap, this is money that should be going to benefits for people who are actually eligible. So I'll say this very plainly. Those who are trying, and this is, I mean, I know I have some younger folks who listen to the program, and you haven't been around long enough to know this, but every time, if you study history, especially political history in America, every time there's a Republican administration or any efforts move towards cutting waste and fraud or trying to rein in runaway spending, you have all of the attack ads. The Democrats want to throw grandmama off the cliff. They want to roll grandmama over here. They want to, and just stop and ask yourself, has any president ever cut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security? Ever. But what happens, and it's the Thomas Sowell quote, it's not that Johnny can't think, it's that Johnny has confused thinking with feeling. So we have all of these fear merchants that are saying, the house is on fire. The house is on fire. And they whip out these same old things. It's like Mr. Joseph Robinette Biden, who, by the way, was the author of the 1994 crime bill, but saying to you know, more melanated citizens, oh, Trump going to put y'all back in chains. Like, what? Get out of here with that. You know, and there has to be a point to where we as a populace mature beyond the talking points that are promulgated for one purpose only, to whip you into emotional frenzy, because everyone understands that people cannot reason well. We don't usually think well, reason well, when we're emotionally aroused. And so there are lots of people who are being whipped into a frenzy because of fear. And they're carrying things, you know, like half-truths and things are pointed about. Somebody sent me a clip of Roland Martin. I'm like, this dude is just a professional liar. Like, he's going to talk all of this stuff. He's not going to admit that the Kamala Harris campaign paid him money for him to interview her. You know, just like Oprah got $2 million for her to be interviewed. And there was like, Oprah, I'm Oprah. No one paid me. I did not receive any money. Except Harpo Productions got the $2 million. What was Harpo is actually Oprah spelled backwards. What is Harpo Productions? Oprah Winfrey's production company. I mean, come on, man. Stop with the madness. Al Sharpton got money to have her. I mean, just stop the madness. So my recommendation for everyone is when you are tempted to be emotionally aroused by something, start looking up for yourself. Before making any conclusions, before getting on the phone with anybody, before calling and saying, look what they're trying to do to us now, y'all. Because it's just a lie. It's just a lie. You can go to whitehouse.gov. There's a press release on front page. It includes hyperlinks to the numerous times President Trump has said, I'm not cutting any of these programs. The truth is, however, that the major drivers of our national debt are our entitlements. That's the truth. So if we're going to try to get our arms around inflation, we're going to try to root out waste, fraud, and abuse, we're going to have to look at it. And when you have, let's go through the numbers again, $521 billion annually in fraud, $2.7 trillion over the last two decades in improper payments, Social Security estimating from 2015 to 2022 that they made $72 billion in improper payments. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services estimating that in 2024 alone that they made over $140 billion in improper payments. What American would want us to look into that? Probably the same ones that's crying over USAID. Remember what we said at the beginning of the program. Nothing is hidden that's not going to come to light. And this is a rare opportunity that we have. You know, people that are complaining about, you know, President Trump, he's not as wealthy as he's saying he is. Let's just keep it 100. Tell the truth. President Trump did not need this. You can say it's for his ego, whatever you want to say. He had a pretty cush lifestyle before running for president. The only unpopularity he endured was when he ran for president. And then, you know, he's willing to do it again. There's not many Americans who would do that, who had the same level of comfort that they have in their lifestyles. And they're willing to say, hey, I'll do this again. And his expressed concern was because he's concerned for America. There are things I disagree with him about. I talked to you about it on this program. But I appreciate his willingness to serve the country in that way. You think Elon Musk needs to get involved with Doge? The wealthiest man in the world? You think he needs that? And there are a lot of things I disagree with him about. I don't agree with him having babies with women and not being a father to these children. I don't agree with that. I do agree and appreciate his desire to root out waste, fraud, and abuse. And in a lot of ways, you can say it's self-interested because he said himself, if the United States goes down the tube, we are the last best hope for the world. If the United States goes down the tube, what's going to happen to his businesses? I'm sure the people in Kandahar just lining up to get Teslas. Come on, man. And it's so unfortunate that we've been so degraded as a society that we're so used to political gangbanging, blues and reds, that we can't even think for a moment. Our national debt and our fiscal house being out of order has us careening towards a cliff. We don't want to stop that. I think that's foolish. I think it's foolish. So I'm grateful for what's happening there, but I'm going to end the program like I always start. What goes on in your house is more important than that. But we're talking about the national government's fiscal house being out of order. Are our personal fiscal houses in order? And an economy, even a balanced budget alone, will not make our nation great, God. Ultimately, the nation will rise and fall based on the makeup of our people. It's the bottom line. So I pray we take full advantage of this window of time, this opportunity that God has given us, that we press as far as we can. But ultimately, what happens in your house is going to be a determining factor of what our nation will be.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.